Enfrenta os Borba Gato e os Raposo Tavares.
Eu vou pra Palmares, eu vou pra Palmares.
Mesmo que eu tenha que cruzar terras e mares, mesmo que eu tenha que cortar serras e ares, e que meu sangue regue o chão solo de nossos lares, pois todos quilombolas são nossos familiares. Índios e foras da lei, renegados e populares, malquistos e malvistos vindos de vários lugares. Você não tá sozinho porque nós somos seus pares. No levante contra bandeirantes militares, este lealdade ao justo rei jurares, e com as próprias mãos paliçadas cavares. Por amor à justiça, a causa amares, e por causa da justiça, ao amor armares. Quando rufares tambor, quando tambor rufares, que nos sangue os calcanhares, contra nós sejam milhares. É tempo de defender nossas raízes milenares. Esperamos, vacilamos, vamos todos pra Palmares. Mesmo que eu tenha que cruzar terras e mares,
eu vou pra Palmares, eu vou pra Palmares.
Mesmo que no caminho me sangrem os calcanhares,
eu vou pra Palmares, eu vou pra Palmares.
Mesmo que os inimigos contra nós sejam milhares,
eu vou pra Palmares, eu vou pra Palmares.
Enfrenta os Borba Gato e os Raposo Tavares.
Anuncios. So, today from 6 to 9 p.m., there's going to be a community event at the Malden Community Center featuring performances by a lot of different music groups. So you can still go if you want. It goes till 9 p.m. February 27th. I guess that's tomorrow. So it's going to be at the Malden Community Center, and it's open to the general public. And there's going to be dance, music, song, video, and poetry. And all proceeds are to benefit the Tri-City Haitian Relief Fund. On Sunday, February 28th, there's going to be a celebration to celebrate Black History Month at the Via Victoria Center for the Arts. And there's going to be good food, spoken word, music, dance, and visual arts. And it's going to be on Sunday from 11:30 to 3:30 p.m. At the Via Victoria Center for the Arts. On Monday, March 1st at 2 p.m., the Coleridge Corner Theater is going to host a special benefit screening of Jonathan Demme's moving documentary, The Agronomist. And he's receiving the 2010 Coolidge Award for his work, so that's really cool. And it also includes Haiti, Dreams of Democracy. So this screening is going to support the Haiti earthquake relief through on-the-ground nonprofit organization Partners in Health, which is a really great organization. So,
and you're listening to WMBR 88.1 FM Cambridge.
On Friday, March 5th, at Simmons College, there's going to be the 13th Annual International Women's Day Breakfast. They're going to be talking about women's role in the green economy. And it's located at 300 The Fenway, Boston, at the Linda K. Pareski Conference Center from 7:30 to 9:30 a.m. And people are going to be discussing the greening of the economy, green jobs, sustainability, renewable energy, and other issues like retrofitting your home. So that should be interesting. And on Wednesday, March 10th, Bikes Not Bombs is going to be having a party. And to celebrate all the volunteers who have been involved with Bikes Not Bombs. So if you're interested in volunteering for them, or if you have volunteered for them in the past, you can come to the party. It's from 7 to 9:30 p.m. on Wednesday, March 10th, at the B&B Hub office, which is at 284 Amory Street. And there's going to be music, games, and food.
And I also have a couple announcements. One is there's an open mic fundraiser this Saturday at Eliconia. All the proceeds will go towards Mountain Justice Spring Break. And Eliconia is a queer, trans person in everyone's space, safe space. For more information, email xapou@hotmail.com for more info.
And our last announcement is that we're going to be having a new radio show.
And what is it called? What letter does it begin with?
It begins with A. So this whole time we've been trying to draw you in so you'll hear about our radio show. It's going to be called Acts Beyond Words. And so our little summary about our show is that we'll be sharing the voices of community-based holistic approaches to social justice and development, both locally and abroad, that allow us to see beyond the golden cage that we call home. So yay. I'm super excited about this radio show.
Va a ser chéverísimo.
Yeah, it's going to be super exciting. But there's a note that the time is going to change. So it's no longer going to be at 6 p.m.
Yes, that's true. When are you guys going to be on?
I believe it's going to be from 8 to 9 on Fridays as well. Who's going to be on that show, by the way?
All kinds of people. You got to tune in and check it out. Friday nights, right? 8 to 9?
Yes, featuring Mary and Claudio. And a
cast of other characters.
Yes, whoever we can manage to come out to our show and to the radio station. And we'll have interesting people to talk to.
Try to sign in. It's going to be awesome.
Okay, so it's that time. It's actually over that time, but the lovely music for human beings, people let us run over. So we're going to say bye with this awesome goodbye song from none other than Lavoe, Hector Lavoe. And he says, todo tiene su final. And that's the same here for Sferio. Tenemos nuestro final, pero esperamos que van a estar con nosotros en el próximo programa. New broadcasting season begins on Monday. Stay tuned for that, and stay tuned for Music for Human Being coming up right after this.
Paca.
Tiene su final. Nada dura para siempre. Tenemos que recordar que no existe eternidad. Como el lindo clave. Todo tiene su final. Nada dura para siempre. Tenemos que recordar que no existe eternidad. Oh, el campeón.
مرحبا. Yes, مرحبا to you. I am الدكتور جالس السكران. And I welcome you. You are listening to Music for Human. And I welcome you. I'm here on this glorious, fairly glorious, somewhat glorious evening with my friend, Professor Levine. Professor, welcome.
Thank you for having me once again.
Professor Levine is an expert on Judean mysticism of the Judaish faith.
With a New Age lemon twist.
Well, it's so good to have you with us again, Professor.
And it is my broad pleasure to be joining you and all our other co-hosts and all those listeners out there in Radio Land.
And speaking of other co-hosts, we have with us Aurora. Aurora, welcome.
Thank you for having me on the show again, Dr. Jalis. It is such a wonderful, wonderful resonance that we have around us today.
Aurora, speaking of resonance, of course, is a speech specialist.
A vocal therapist.
Thank you once again for being here with us, Aurora.
Thank you for allowing our souls and our everything combine again.
It is so wonderful to be close. I recently was meditating upon the idea that we all depend so much on oxygen and other life giving forces of the planet. It is as though we were all fruits attached to the same tree, drawing on the life of the planet. And it is this way from the moment we are born until we die and suddenly are removed, plucked from the tree by the great gatherer of fruits.
One might say that it's almost as if we are all apples on the same grapevine.
Indeed. And we look about and find ourselves perplexed at the variety of other fruits that are attached. But yet, we were born here, and we can no more imagine departing and being without the life-giving juices than an apple can imagine leaving the vine. And yet life does continue briefly for the apple once it has been plucked.
Yes, this reminds me a bit in my Jewish studies of a verse from the Song of Solomon, which is one of the books of the Bible, probably my favorite book of the Bible for its wonderful erotic love poetry. But the verse says that the female is speaking and she says, "My beloved is as an apple tree in the orchard. His leaves and branches provide shade to my weary self, and his juicy fruit are sweet to my palate, and his juices run down my chin."
And it is from this verse that the chewing gum, Juicy Fruit, was named.
That's correct, yes. A really smart marketing ploy for 1950s America, where it was assumed that the average consumer was well aware of these kinds of biblical allusions.
It's incredible also how the marketing for juicy fruit has changed over the decades. I remember very vividly seeing juicy fruit commercials and advertisements from the 80s when it was shown as... I remember being perplexed by a scene with dozens of mountain bikers leaping into the ocean and thinking to myself, are they chewing the gum? Where is the gum involved? Mm. Are they manufacturing the gum? Or, you know, are they part of the gum? If you were to analyze the gum, perhaps using a microscope, you know, would this be a common scene on one corner?
I believe all of these scenes, they speak to an inner desire to all of us. I mean, that is what commercials are for, but in this particular sense, especially how all of us have become in America, how all of us have become so languid, so slow, that we want to believe that there is a chewing gum that gives us the vitality of life, to feel connected with one another once more, and to feel truly alive. And I believe if everyone took the time to just meditate and to feel within themselves.
Well, I do feel within myself quite frequently. But beyond that, I think this trend of advertising that you're talking about was probably the first stage of what was known as branding. So I think in the early stages of advertising, the commercial would say, this product is really nice and you should use it. But then... marketers realize that this is not the most effective way to get people to do what you want. And this is actually a very interesting area of study, the area of influence. And they realize that a more indirect yet effective way to get people to do the things they wanted was to build associations in their mind between some product and some positively valenced concept, such as active mountain sporting. And so a lot of people, you know, think that active mountain sporting is a very cool thing, and they would like to be, in theory, involved in that. And then once they build that association in their mind with the juicy, juicy fruit, they want to build this self-identity for themselves as a rugged mountain person, and thus they start to chew the juicy, juicy fruit.
And the juices perhaps yield some sort of sport-giving power.
I'd like to go back to this fruit-bearing tree analogy, that all of us are sprung from the same tree and that we are all fruity brethren. And in this sense, this is such a beautiful image, by the way, who are the mountain people? Are they the rugged fruit or are they the vibrant, healthy fruit?
I'm not sure that the metaphor extends to the point where we could judge one fruit over another, and indeed... two apples may be plucked from the same branch, and one may be small but have an extreme flavor, whereas another may be large and firm and have an excellent texture, but only a mild or watered-down flavor.
That is exactly my point, Dr. Jollis, and in my endeavors as a non-Calarian, I have noticed that it is just those fruits which are bruised, which are covered in flies, that can be the most delicious. And so perhaps the beauty that we see within each piece of fruit, within one another, unless we look closer and look deeper into one another, we may not actually feel the true beauty behind each person as they truly are.
Well, you know, speaking of this issue of human, the core of human existence as being members of a tree and being fruits, I actually was meditating and exploring this question of the core of human existence, the essence of our humanity. And I came to the surmise, the hypothesis, the tentative conclusion that the key core of humanity is humor.
That is the root quality?
The root quality of our human existence is humor. And that somehow... humor is the very essence of mankind. I wonder what you think about that idea.
I wondered.
And of course, the corollary is probably that life is nothing but a joke.
Well, I think that humor is unlikely to be the reason that we were created, but I think it is a fortunate side effect and perhaps a fortunate accident of our creation. We have hypothesized earlier that we were created simply to produce inert substances like plastic. And it is one of these things. It seems similar, in terms of I think that there is a very healthy aspect to this attitude, however, which is to treat these grave topics which leave philosophers scratching into the pages in the evenings, that we should take some whimsy.
Hmm. Well, that reminds me of a quote a friend of mine related to me. I'm not sure who he was quoting, but he said that it is generally good practice to go to the funerals of your friends, for if you don't, they won't go to your funerals either. It's actually a very funny thing if you think about it.
Well, I believe that humor, especially from a vocal standpoint, is such a wonderful gift from the cosmos. The fact that we are able to laugh at ourselves and at others. I mean, to the listener, think back to the last moment in time that you were in a frightening situation. What was the first thing that you did after the immediate shock? And in many cases, it was a burst of laughter.
Or eating an apple.
Yes, and that burst of laughter, it works to release the tension in your body, to allow yourself to relax and to take in everything around you without that adrenaline rush. And from the resonant standpoint, laughter has this beautiful waveform that immediately smooths out all sharp peaks or deltas.
But do other animals also laugh?
Oh, of course they do, without a doubt.
Yeah, the fish are known for their hysterics, actually.
Do the deer laugh? Because I have noticed that when you make a sudden movement near deer or other quadruped, that often they will run, and then even when they realize that there was no danger, they continue to be skittish and to be shocked by the same thing. And I wonder if they are really they really lack laughter, and this is why they are unable to learn.
Well, I mean, I think this way of thinking about things you can view as sort of an intermediate point between a very religious point of view, where life is, you know, some very serious divine mission, versus pure nihilism, where you believe life has no meaning and is totally devoid of any purpose. And so I think, to me, the solution is that life is not meaningless. It's something that should be enjoyed to the utmost, but it should be taken as a very big joke. So a joke has a meaning. The meaning is usually the punchline. And so I think we can view our quest in life as the search for the punchline of life. I think part of this philosophy of not taking things too seriously involves being willing to buck convention, being willing to push the boundaries of social convention, to see what happens, to experiment a little. I think we talked last time about this idea of stopping strangers in the street and asking them deep, meaningful questions, seeing what happens. I think it'd be a great experiment. I think we should all be willing to push those boundaries and experiment a little.
I've thought that that certain aspects of life, perhaps a good attitude in general would be to treat some aspects of life with the expectation or the preparation for a deep, meaningful meaning, but otherwise to be prepared for the lack of any meaning.
Cover all your bases.
Precisely.
So I suppose one might... I've heard of these people who actually adhere to as many religions as possible. So they will be a member of many different faiths, sort of to cover all their bases to make sure they get into heaven. And it can be difficult because many of the religious holidays might conflict with one another. So there might be a Jewish holiday which says that today you have to eat unleavened bread, which may fall on Ramadan, which is a Muslim holiday in which you're not allowed to eat at all. And I think trying to follow all these religions can actually lead to trouble. So my solution is actually to not follow any religion, to study them and understand their spiritual message, but to act in a purely religious-less way, a hedonistic way to some degree, but also a way which is searching for that cosmic punchline to the eternal joke of mankind.
Mm.
Dr. Jalas, you seem very tired today.
I was thinking just for a moment that the ancient man must have found it rare to be without any danger and to have no reason to be alert. But I find myself often in that situation, and it makes me drowsy.
Hmm.
I'm much more awake when I'm in danger of being skewered or struck by swerving automobile.
Hmm.
So when you were in the juicy fruit situation of life.
In the juicy fruit. And here I am, remaining very juicy and fruity, and in no fear of being suddenly removed.
I wonder if psychosis might be a freeing event.
Hmm.
So, I mean, of course, every day we walk around, we live in society, and we follow so many implicit rules. We must wear clothing as we walk down the street. We must not talk to ourselves. We must talk to other people in the socially appropriate way.
We must not smile in the Boston area.
We must not smile to strangers. We must not smack people for no reason.
Yeah,
or punch people.
No less liberating than being intoxicated.
Well, even when one is intoxicated, I think there are certain boundaries. They shift, but a true psychotic can not care about the consequences, not aware of them. He can walk naked down the street, muttering to himself.
Hmm.
And I think that may be a very enjoyable experience, which, unfortunately, I won't let myself commit.
I would love to hear some of these listeners break their own personal boundaries, especially those who have not called in before, and call us. It would be wonderful to hear from you. Our number is 617-253-8810.
Yes, I mean, I think it's especially important today since Dr. Dallas is so tired and he seems not really to be able to contribute very actively to the conversation.
Alas, I rarely, really am required to, though, because the two of you are so wonderful and so active and energetic and think such beautiful things.
I think beautiful things, but sometimes I don't say beautiful things, and I can get into trouble.
Have you ever met someone whom afterwards you were forced simply to say, this person thinks terrible thoughts?
I believe someone has called in to share their thoughts with us.
Let's see if this caller has any beautiful thoughts.
Marhaban, caller.
Hello?
Caller, welcome.
Hi, I just wanted to say I was really excited to hear you talk about the Book of Song of Solomon.
Mm.
I find role-playing in a safe but exploratory sexual environment, that mm-hmm. book. Yeah.
So it's sort of a religious experimentation, you might say. You might be King David and your wife might be Bathsheba.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I
you
mean,
sort
I,
of can
I,
act out these biblical yeah. stories.
I actually have not found a partner who's willing to sexually role-play these biblical characters, but I think that'd be liberating.
Okay, so it's sort of a self-indulged act, I guess.
Yeah, a self-role-playing.
I see. So would you, for example, create a cardboard cutout, maybe, of Bathsheba?
Yeah, that is a
squalid story. Pour some, have her pouring water on herself, maybe some sort of mechanical spring or fountain, and yeah, then we pass by, and yes.
This is a dream.
Well, also, I think that many of these fantasies would require a number of handmaidens that may not be, readily available. Yes. Do you ever feel any desire to recreate certain other of the scenes in the Bible?
I just find, like you mentioned, the book of Song of Solomon is just
intoxicating, one might say. I find it, yeah. I mean, these lines like, your hair are like the goats of Gilead as they run down the mountain.
And you are black, but beautiful.
You are black. Well, there's some controversy about the translation. It's Shechora Aniv Na'ava. I am black, and some interpret it, and I am beautiful, or I am black, but I am beautiful.
Well, speaking of both black and beautiful, we're very pleased to have Lester Woods, who just joined us in the studio. Lester, welcome.
Good evening.
Lester, it's been so long. Tell us about your journeys.
Oh, well, I really don't want to interrupt the flow of the conversation, but let's just say that right now I'm feeling very elevated.
Hmm. Well, you are a very tall gentleman, towering above us all, really. And I'd imagine if you wanted to roleplay some biblical story, you would probably be best portrayed as Goliath.
I've been likened to the same.
What processes have you gone through in order to reach your extreme elevation and your great feelings at this moment?
Well, as a light minister, I'd have to say that I was certainly studying within the realm of science. It's actually been such a long journey through many transgressions in time that it's even a question of, when you're talking about biblical stories, does time really ever matter?
Well, and does it ever really matter that the stories occurred, or when they occurred, or where they occurred, or why they occurred, or even how they occurred? Now, caller, the caller is enthusiastic and may take a moment to himself role play the same and cause these same stories to occur now. Have you had any success with this caller or any of the more violent scenes? Is the caller still with us?
Well, I was going to suggest...
Yes, I am.
Oh, he's still there. Okay.
I still prefer the more erotic.
Well, since you mentioned that you've had difficulty finding partners who are willing to role-play these biblical scenes, I would suggest that you actually role-play them in your mind and just don't tell your partner that she's a part of this fantasy and just sort of... So, for example, this is something that I like to do personally. There is this story in Genesis about these angels who came down to Earth and they chose the most beautiful of women and they slept with them, and their offspring were giants, very large people. So I like to pretend, when I go through the process of seduction with a beautiful woman, I like to pretend that I am an angel.
Or a giant.
No, an angel, and I like to pretend that my goal is to select the most beautiful human women,
mm-hmm,
and impregnate them with giants. And I don't usually tell them about this.
Do they survive?
Well, it's usually helpful to pick very tall women. So women who are... I tend to try to find WNBA players who have sort of a powerful pelvis and hips.
Large birthing hips.
Exactly, and can actually have the ability to birth a giant.
Caller,
no, please.
Caller, do you mind if we ask your name?
Yes. I'm a police officer, and my name is Kip.
Kip.
Well, Officer Kip, I wondered if you had experienced actual reluctance in the sorts of role play, or if it's something that you simply have been too shy yourself to broach.
No, I actually have tried, but unfortunately, when I call out like Bathsheba in bed, they generally associate that with perhaps I'm cheating, or they don't understand that it's a religious biblical fantasy.
Well, perhaps, Caller, there are ways you can mask your voice in a sort of singing, exuberant sort of expression that can aid you in this endeavor.
Hmm. I would also, I mean, given that you're an officer of the law, you might try this at, say, a traffic stop. So next time you pull someone over, it doesn't have to be sexual role play, but you could get up and say, "I am King David. May I see your license and registration?"
Yes. I work in a prison, so I'm actually an officer in a prison. So, yeah, it's all men. So generally, I don't want to role play there.
Well, you know, as Professor Levine intimated there, it may not have to be, erotic role play. Maybe there are other ways to take pleasure from this this exercise.
I mean, I believe, the jail populations probably has a similar demographic as Sodom and Gomorrah.
Lots of sodomy
and petty crime and evil. So you might actually role play that story.
Just like a lot.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask you a question. On this tree of fruit, what type of fruit and what shape do you envision yourself as?
I don't believe the fruit is as important as when you're picked. I think that's the most beautiful time. Right before you go rotten, I think that's the most important time.
A lot of fruit is really afraid of being picked. And there is a great debate about what happens after.
Well, of course, bananas are notoriously difficult to pick. As soon as you reach your arm to pick one, it will actually immediately move away from you, as plants are known to do. They can move. And as a result, it usually takes at least 5 people to simultaneously pick the bananas from a banana tree.
One in each direction.
Right, to sort of capture it and corner the fruit. And luckily, they're usually grown in Central America, and the labor there is very inexpensive, so one can actually hire 5 pickers per banana shrub.
I think the real danger is that the banana may move into the hand of an ape while, 6 or 7 people are trying to pick it.
Or into the eye, maybe, of, one person reaches for the banana.
Precisely.
Swings away right into someone's eye and takes out the eye.
I would think that would take some talent also.
Well, that's why they usually do wear these kind of safety goggles.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, Officer Kip, going back to earlier in our conversation, there was an issue of guilt that I wanted to try to address, which... you were talking about some of the role plays and maybe being too imaginative could get in the way of some of the New Age ideals that we try to practice here. And I just wanted to get your thought on whether that's ever crossed your mind, and if you feel like it is one barrier to, living a happy coexistence here.
Oh, without a doubt, there's trying to rectify the fact that I represent the system of law, and I'm also trying to experiment biblically and sexually biblically. I don't know if I'd say guilt, more of like fear of reprisal or people at work. It's difficult to explain.
It is so difficult a situation. It's so disheartening to have to hide, to feel like you have to hide a part of who you really are.
Yeah.
And I can sense this in your voice, this grief that others may not accept you, that your friends, that your co-workers may not understand you and may outcast you. But I would like you to reach out to meditate and to close your eyes and to reach out with your soul to the world around you and to say, This is who I am, and to feel the embrace.
This is who I am.
This is who you are.
That is who you are, and we here at Music for Human Beings, we accept you for who you are as a biblical fetishist.
We do, but unfortunately, we cannot speak for WMBR or the Technology Broadcasting Corporation on that aspect.
But we as human beings here, as music is for human beings and the show is for human beings, and we personally as human beings accept you.
That means a lot to me.
Yeah, as co-fruit on the vine.
Perhaps we could experiment together on this, maybe.
A certain type of...
Well, I think we could. I mean,
we have Goliath here.
Well, we have Goliath, but I think, given we were talking about the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, it might be nice if the caller imagined himself as a pillar of salt, which cannot speak...
Momentarily,
which cannot speak or make any noise.
I think we might all join in being salt pillars, except for Aurora, for maybe 1 minute. Shall we all try that, co-hosts?
Okay, what will Aurora...
Aurora could be a lot, simply observing not one, but five pillars of salt.
And sort of maybe serenading those pillars.
If Aurora so chooses.
I know that Aurora has a beautiful singing voice.
Caller, do you consent to this experiment?
This is a dream come true.
Excellent. For 1 minute, then. Let's begin.
I feel the disheartening echoes, the silent pillars of salt reaching above me, the white points, the falling grains that tumble slowly down the sides. I am at loss. And yet, I am rejuvenated. I have felt the embrace of the world around me.
So that was 1 minute.
That was quite an amazing experience, I might say.
It was incredible.
Because I have never felt that salty before.
It's difficult to think for a moment that I am a pillar of salt and I'm being sung to, and how would I feel? And then perhaps a pillar of salt has no ears, and so all I am sensing is more vibrations. Mm. And are these meaningful to me? And caller, what was your experience there?
I just can't tell you how much I appreciate what you've done tonight. I think you've liberated a whole new spectrum of, some would call, inappropriate exploratory sexual biblical role playing, and I think this was groundbreaking.
Thank you so much, Officer Kip.
And of course, we want to hear from many, many, many more of you. We know you're out there listening and you're just itching to call. And we really want to hear from you. We will not judge you here. We will embrace you telephonically. I mean, the number is 617-253-8810. We have 32 lines open at the moment.
This image of the fruit, I'd like to go back to this image because, suddenly it may suggest that when we die, it is simply that we are ripe and it's time for the second phase of our lives.
It's time for us to be made into banana bread.
Or a pie.
Right.
And some of us may be sweet, but others need to be sun-dried to be enjoyed. And occasionally we will be freeze-dried for later enjoyment.
Yes, sun might be dried and flattened
and smashed, made into a mush.
Into a mush.
Or a juice. There is a rich future ahead for many of us, and of course many of us will be thrown into the waste pile and eaten by kittens
or stray dogs
or bacteria.
Yeah, either way though, we are being consumed and used by the world, and I think no matter how we live our lives as human beings, whether we embrace the humor, the joke that is life, or whether we live a serious life, whether we act as psychotics just for fun, either way, we will be consumed by the universe in a productive way, and we will be part of that whole, the holistic cycle of life.
Now, Officer Peter, I was wondering, have you been looking into any iridology? Have you recently had your aura read? Just curious if you've gone through the usual tests.
I've only had one extraterrestrial experience, and it did shake me up, and I really was like a kind of an out of body experience. But no, I'm open to any sort of psychic intervention.
Well, the iridology is actually a very interesting one. It's unfortunately not psychic, but it's one way that I would say it's a good way to introspect. You know, everyone has a mirror in the bathroom, in the workplace.
You need one inside.
That's right.
An internal mirror. It will help you also laugh and weep at the joke of humanity.
Simultaneously laughing and weeping. I've heard that some gurus have said that the achievement of the simultaneous weep and laugh, genuine ones, authentic ones, they can't be faked or forced, would be the sign of true enlightenment.
Similar to the seasoned trumpet player being able to blow and to suck air simultaneously.
That's a true sign of mastering the third chakra.
It's a challenge, though. You know, it's one not to be taken lightly.
And I did, I was chopping onions the other day, and with a friend, and she told me a very funny joke, and I started laughing, and I had tears running down my eyes from the onions.
For the plight of the onion.
Yeah, well, no, it was just induced by the fragrance of the onion. And I thought for a second, I am close, I am laughing and crying, but I realized that it was not true crying because I was not feeling sad.
And also those who have been tickled as they are experiencing grief do not feel the same enlightenment.
Usually they just get very angry. I mean, I've tried tickling people at funerals and it hasn't ended very well for the most part.
It's treated as irreverent, but I think there is a higher point that needs to be made. That, again, there is a cosmic joke, and some part of the world laughs even as this fruit falls.
Of course, at the Irish wake, one can actually be very boisterous at a funeral. One is supposed to achieve a certain level of inebriation, and it can result in lighthearted humor and singing and sort of feeling the shared humanity of your fellow mourners, sort of embracing that brotherhood of mankind. And I think that can be a very, very powerful event. And that event of observing death can help one appreciate all the human experiences that we've had. And I recently actually looked back on my own life, and I came to the realization that every single human interaction I've had, whether it be with a stranger in an elevator, which was very awkward, or an ex-girlfriend, or my family, they've all enriched my life, and they've all added to it. And none of them are regretful in any way.
And it's the type of enrichment that, you know, doesn't happen from poisoning through too many minerals being extracted from a mine. You know, it's not the kind of mercury enrichment that you receive from eating too much tuna. Mm. It's just a very pure kind.
That's right. That's right.
And it is. I've noticed very strange fruit on the vine with us, and I've never ceased to be amazed at the diversity of the fruit and how unusual many cultures can be. I was familiar with a culture where it was common to strike someone upon meeting them. And the theory behind this greeting was that you were giving someone respect by showing them that they could tolerate the blow.
Well, I do feel that when one is undergoing, let's say, martial arts training, that the first step is always to try to beat up the master. So you come in and they say, okay, I'm going to teach you. You must follow my command. You must treat me as a master. Hmm. First, you have to prove it. And so they may be an old man, but you must try to fight them
mm-hmm.
in any way you can. And if you can beat them, then they are not worthy of being your master. So they must first beat you and show you their complete mastery.
Mm. I understand that there are several people who return after being beaten by the master and mow him down. And naturally, you know, the sort of... diplomatic problems begin between the families or between the authorities. And Officer Kipp, I'm sure that you are familiar with many such cases.
Well, absolutely. The jails are filled with people who are violent towards old sensei, martial artists, grandmasters, yeah. I corroborate that.
That's really unfortunate to hear. But Dr. Jollis, I know that you come from a long line of self-defense.
Of course, you know, it's not a well-known thing, but there is an ancient tradition of Arabic martial arts. A lot of it centers around developing advanced weaponry.
I thought it was mostly camouflage, that the Arabic martial arts, like, the main strategy is to look like a rock.
Certainly that is part of it, but you have to realize that we live in a place where the terrain and the terrain also is very regular. And so it's difficult.
But there are rocks, correct?
There are.
And I believe that the advanced practitioners of the Arab martial arts can successfully disguise themselves as a rock.
I would not know if I met one, I'm sure.
But that's got to be the whole point of it.
Precisely, yeah. I'm certainly lack this capability, and maybe this is why I have become such a diplomatic, polite person. Mm. To avoid having to suddenly fight a rock.
Yeah, I believe you did fight a rock.
Perhaps the best way to fight a rock is to not engage.
Be another rock.
Or to be another rock.
A larger rock.
No, not necessarily larger.
Sharper.
A harder rock, yes.
Rock hard.
But again, all of these ways of fighting one another, they are so meaningless to me, especially in this tree, this fruity tree view of people. Because it is, just imagine if you would see fruit beating up one another. I believe we have another caller.
Mm, finally.
Caller two, you are on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say that if you wanted to fight a rock, you'd have to fight it indirectly, either by placing it in a place where it would be eroded or where there would be a great change in temperature or atmospheric pressure.
So you might want to find a geologist to fight the rock. You might want to hire a little army of geologists.
But, caller, I would like to point out that I, Dr. Jalis Sakran, is just as susceptible, if not more, to each of these methods as the rock would be. So if I were to engage a quartz stone in a contest of erosion, I would certainly fail also. We would both be ground to dust.
Well, but of course.
In the ensuing deluge. So, you know, you have a method for certainly defeating a rock, but also being defeated.
Well, the point is that you can't, an individual alone cannot fight something like a rock, because it's not an organic thing.
Well, Carla, this is the beautiful thing about your point, that it is completely pointless, that fighting a rock is an exercise in futility, in spiritual and physical futility.
But you may be forced to battle with an army of rocks.
Yes.
Was there? There's this Greek myth, I believe, of a man who has to carry a rock from point A to point B, and then back from point B to point A. What is that?
Syphilis?
Syphilis, okay. No, so
it was the myth of Sisyphus.
Sisyphus.
But yeah, there's that, and there's also the thing where Jesus said, you know, I built you, you are the rock, meaning Peter, whose name means rock, who became the foundation of stuff that supposedly reflects stuff that supposedly someone...
So the Pope... As the heir of Peter, is a rock.
As the pontiff of the supposed. Oh. Yeah, that guy. Yeah, rock. The thing about rocks is that they don't really talk that much.
Well, of course, there is the story of the music.
The music and the song of the stonecutter?
Well, the music has many lessons, caller, but unfortunately this music is the lessoning us that we are out of time, alas.
Oh, man.
So, thank you both, callers, so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thanks also to Lester Woods this evening for joining us.
My pleasure, as always.
And to Aurora.
Thank you so much. Namaste.
And to Professor Levine.
Thank you.
I am Dr. Jalis Sakran here on Music for Human at WMBR 88.1 FM, Cambridge. Stay tuned for Massachusetts Bay and Response. Ma'asalama.
four points for safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
The views and opinions presented on this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT.
Good evening, ladies, gentlemen, children, dogs, kittens.
Non-human animals.
And non-human animals. Okay, hi, this is Gina, sitting across the table from me. Is my faithful co-host, Brad. And, guys, this is our last show, maybe ever, at WMBR, so we hope you enjoy it. We're going to do a reading, but this we're going to depart a little bit from the first readings to just read... Each of us is going to read texts that we really love, that we have very intimate relationships with, and it's going to be a bit of a medley. Maybe we should just introduce all the